to be a human in the B2B marketplace requires so much more than just figuring out, you know, how much did I spend? How much money did I make? Does it work? Those are all direct marketing things, and that's all logical. But you've got to get down deep with your audience. You've got to know your audience. You've got to really be one with them. That's why I call my list my online family.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Brian Kurtz. Here's three facts I think you should know about Brian. One, he is responsible for the distribution of over 2 billion pieces of promotional copy in his career. And that includes both online and offline. Some of you might remember the offline days. And while doing that, he says he's never met a medium he didn't like. Well, there were two, which he could tell us about later if we ask. And he never met a customer he didn't like, although admittedly he hadn't met all 2 billion personally. So maybe there were a few he might not like.
I don't want to say that, but you know, yeah, there might have been.
2 billion people out there is bound to be some that fall into different camps.
Right.
Second fact about him is, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, he's had two near-death experiences, and the key to his full recovery is his family. And his close second is his direct marketing. That helped him recover, both those two. I'm sure the family had the bigger influence.
It did.
And the third fact is that he is a Little League World Series umpire, and that means a lot to him. And that must be interesting and challenging, because when you're the umpire, you could be the most hated person in the stadium.
Yeah, no one goes to the game to see the umpire. So if they see the umpire or hear the umpire, it could be a problem.
You bet. Yeah. Umpire. Yeah. Brian Kurtz, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks, George. Pleasure to be here. I'm excited. The way you prepped for this and the way you interacted with me in advance was, you know, I've been on probably 300 podcasts in my career, or in the last 5-6 years. So I judge the host by how much they prepare, how much they are into it. And you go deep with your guests, and you got to know, from my perspective, that means a lot. And so I really appreciate you.
By the way, Brian, I appreciate that very much too, because you know how we both in whatever task, whatever projects we work on, we like to be good at what we do and consistent, and we like to think we're good, but you know, we all need to hear it from someone else every once in a while.
Right. And it ties into the title of the podcast, Your Intended Message. Like, you know, I have a section in my book, Over Deliver, in chapter 10, which talks about intentional dinners. I mean, intention in everything, intention in your marketing. And you got it in the title of your podcast. Good for you. But intention is everything. If you're intending to sell, you're intending to deliver content, you're intending to service somebody in some way, intention is everything. And then how you prepare for that intention, you know, there was a book long ago somebody wrote called Dare to Prepare, and it was written by a lawyer that I knew. And, you know, prepare, it's true in copywriting. You know, the best copywriters do a ton of research before they even write a stitch of copy. And that's all about intention. What is your ultimate intention with a podcast, with a sales letter, with anything? And how you go about it is equally important to actually doing it. And so, you know, it's like it's good. We're both eating our own dog food, basically, which is really good.
Now, it's interesting you talk about intention. When you were early in your career writing marketing copy for the newsletter Boardroom Reports, and which I was looking around because I know I had some I keep things like that because it had practical tips. I read
right,
a lot.
That was the whole purpose of the Boardroom newsletters. The big newsletter was Bottom Line Personal. That was the consumer newsletter. But I wasn't writing copy for it. I was marketing. I was on the marketing side. But the appreciation I had for copy, it's funny. You know, people don't, if they don't pay attention to all my, what I've done, they just assume I'm a copywriter, which is fine because I think copywriters are, you know, the magicians of the business, so to speak. And so if I could be in there, anybody who calls me a copywriter, I don't want to deny it because it makes me feel good. But I always say, I wrote a blog post once that I'm a copywriter wannabe. And people like called me out on it, on my list. You know, they said, what are you talking about? You're writing with all these things that you do in terms of weaving a story into maybe a sales message, but not a hard sale. They were saying all of these things. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I guess I do that, but it's because I've been exposed to it for 40 years. And so I'm almost doing it by rote, but I am not a cop. I'm not a copywriter in the sense that, you know, the idea of writing a package or a letter or doing a video sales letter or a complete direct mail package or a TV infomercial, I could never write that soup to nuts. That was not my strength nor my superpower. My superpower was more in, you know, analyzing the audience and the list. And to me, you know, it's actually more important than the creative and the copy. There's a three-legged stool. If you read in my book in chapter 4, when I talk about RFM and list selection, I say that there's a three-legged stool in direct marketing. It's lists, offer, and creative. And so, you know, there was a 40-40-20 rule that the success was 40% list, 40% offer, and 20% on the creative. And the interesting thing is that it's not that precise, first of all. And second of all, I've studied all the great copywriters. I mean, my first book was about six of the greats of all time. And I work with the greats of copywriting because I'm not one and I want to be like them in a way. But when I study the copywriters, it's amazing that I have quotes and quotes. I've saved all these quotes from all these copywriters. They're all about the list. It's not about their copy. They say, you know, the classic is Gary Halbert. And he said, you know, it's not the brilliant burger. It's the hungry audience. And Gene Schwartz would say things like, you know, it's not the copywriter's job is not to create desire. The desire is already in the marketplace. The copywriter's job is to kind of channel it and bring it, you know, into focus. And that's a very important distinction. And so I say in a jaded way, the copywriters knew that the list was most important because they knew if they're writing to a list that was targeted, made their job a whole lot easier because you can't write great copy to an audience that doesn't want your product. You get zero orders out of that. And that's why, you know, it's really important to match, you know, the list or the audience with the message. And that's why you have, you know, the best marketers have different copy for different segments of their list. Because, you know, I got to tell you, simply put, lists are people too. And it's not just names on a piece of paper. And if you can dissect them and segment them in different ways, that's how you talk to them. You talk to them in at least buckets, if not individuals.
Brian, you disdain or avoid the label of being called a copywriter. If someone were to put a label on you, what label could you live with?
A few. I could live with nice guy. I could live with good umpire. But I guess I would live with something like that. I'm a serial direct marketer. And the reason why I like that, because people talk about being serial entrepreneurs and serial founders and serial investors. And I don't know too many people who would say they're a serial direct marketer. And what that means to me is that it means that I'm a slave to measurability. I'm a slave to accountability. I'm a slave to responsibility in my marketing. because everything I buy in marketing, everything, every media that I said, I've never met a medium I didn't like, but you've got to buy the right media and then you got to get results and say, is it the right media? And so, you know, the fact, you know, to say I'm a serial advertiser, would I have disdain for that too? If I was a serial, you know, public relations person or a serial publicity person, that would make me, you know, hate to say it, but it would be like, you know, blasphemy to me, because there's no ROI in those kinds of advertising. There's no measurability. And that's why being a serial direct marketer, it's funny that I talk about this, because I was an English major in college. So I am not a math guy. I'm not a statistics guy, but I was a slave to my numbers. I have a quote on my wall here. I have different quotes from people that I took out of my office at Boardroom. And one of them is from Dick Benson. Dick Benson was one of the smartest guys who ever lived in the area of direct mail. He didn't really exist in the internet world, but I learned everything about direct mail from Dick Benson. And he had a quote, and I have it on my wall, you have to believe your numbers. And what he's saying there, it doesn't sound that deep, but it really is, because, you know, he used to say you have to believe your numbers because they're all you got. And so if you have two tests, I mean, just as simple as this, you have an A-B split of two creative tests, and you have to know what the numbers are, which one's the winner, are the numbers statistically significant? I mean, all those things. I mean, and yet I was an English major. I hated math. I hated statistics. And my whole career has been all about being obsessed with the numbers. Now, I had someone else do the numbers for me. I wasn't a spreadsheet jockey, but I was interested in what the spreadsheet showed. I could read a mail plan better than anybody. I could read a spreadsheet of results of a campaign, online or offline, better than anybody. I knew what data I wanted to see. So having somebody always at my side during my years at Boardroom, and even now, having somebody who can get me the data, you know, talk about a dashboard. I want my dashboard with those numbers so I can assess all the data that I'm doing in my business all the time, just like I did at Boardroom and like I do now. Is this working? Is it not working? Long answer to your question, but I would say serial direct marketer would do the trick for me. The other one that I would say that would be one that I'd like would be, because people have called me a guru and I'm not a guru. I hate that term. But people who have called me an OG, an original gangster, I like that, because that tells me that they're not just because it sounds cool, but they're basically saying, if I'm an original gangster, it's saying that what I know from the past that's applicable to the present and the future is bedrock fundamentals that stand the test of time. I mean, you know, chapter two of Over Deliver, my book, is basically, the title of the chapter is the importance of original source. Like, you know, where babies come from, not for nostalgia, but to know if you know where it came from and the origins, you can actually adapt it way better in any funnel, anything online, anything that's state of the art today, if you really understand that deeply. Chapter three of the book is how paying postage made me a better marketer. I don't like to be dubbed a direct mail guy, but I grew up in direct mail and I made a transition. I think I'm a bridge from that world to today's world, where most of the people who I grew up with in direct mail didn't make that transition. I did, and I'm still in that transition. I'm still a student all the time. But the more important thing is that it's really important to really understand that being from direct mail, I just happened to fall into it, but being a student of direct mail, being a practitioner of direct mail, means that I knew discipline. I knew direct marketing discipline, going back to the numbers, you know, that I knew that before, it's like they say, you know, before you hit send on an email, you should think about what you're sending. We had to in direct mail. We're paying postage, printing to the tune of $500 to $1,000 a thousand. I'm not going to putz around with, you know, hitting send on a 3 million name direct mail campaign ain't the same as sending out 3 million emails. Now, the reason why I have that chapter, why paying postage made me a better marketer, is that I still use the same discipline when I send out email. When I send out my email every week, I have a blog that I send out every week to 15,000 people. When I hit send on that blog post, I have the same mentality and discipline that I had when we gave the letter shop, the guys who were sending out our direct mail, we gave them instructions to say, the mail is good to go, send out 4 million pieces. It's the same thing. Because and the difference is that people who are all email all the time, which is fine, I'm not saying it's bad, but anybody who's email all the time would say, well, I sent out an email, I got no response, I got no feedback, but it's okay because I'll just send out another one. Well, it's not okay because you want to explore what you did. Now, in direct mail, you'll know because you spend all this money on the direct mail campaign. And if you don't make some of that money back, you'll know that you fail in some way. In email, you say, oh, it's not a big deal. I didn't fail because, you know, you don't think it's an epic fail if you don't get any response or any engagement with your list after you email it. I say poo to that. I say that, you know, every time you communicate, I mean, everything that you send out in email, it's like in direct mail, everything had to be somewhat selling something because you're spending so much. In email, it may not be a revenue event, but it's got to be a relationship event. It's got to be you got to accomplish something with everything you send. And if you're just throwing emails out to people, hoping that they'll respond, I think that's a recipe for disaster. It's like if you look at retail direct mail, you know, I was on the Banana Republic list, for instance, because I bought some pants from them. And I got an email like every single day with the same thing, 40% sale, 50% sale, 30% sale. Who the hell can keep track of all that? And the fact that they're bombarding you with the same messaging all the time is, I mean, that led to a quick unsubscribe on the one hand. But on the other hand, it's like, you're not giving me any value. It's this kind of marketing that says, well, a clock is a broken clock is right twice a day. They figure like if they keep sending that same message, at some point I'll be ready to buy pants again and I'll take them up on the sale. There's nothing in each message that differentiates it from another message. So that's the mistake a lot of people online make, in that because it's cheap, they think they can just do anything. And I think it's a mistake to do that.
Brian, is it fair to say that the lessons that you learned in sending out real mail with postage, because there's real cost to doing that, and which means that when you make a mistake, there's a cost, that those lessons help you be a better email website marketer, because that you still, even though there's not the dollar cost, there's the time cost and perhaps the relationship damage?
Absolutely. You said it perfectly. And the thing I would just add on to that, the relationship damage, you don't know it right away. That's the problem. I told a story in my book about a guy who had a big email list, and he would email them every day with a tip of the day, a thought of the day. And it was a very woo-woo kind of audience. They were very, it was personal development. It was just a heartfelt email every day about like his, you know, how are you gonna live your life today, like and to the fullest. And then he started taking on affiliates of people like selling stuff to this list, but stuff that was congruent. He sold a yoga offer, a meditation offer, other personal development offers, a book, whatever. And no unsubscribes, no damage. People were saying great, and he would make some money on it, and that was great. Then one day he said, oh, my audience, you know, they're probably very self-sufficient. And he got an offer from a guy to do an offer for real estate investing. Now, automatically you say, real estate investing and personal development and yoga and meditation, what's the connection? He made a connection in his mind that said, you know, they're self-sufficient, they probably aren't making a lot of money, made a supposition there, and that this would be a way to them to supplement their income. Well, bad idea. Because he went out with a real estate investing offer and he got like 30% of his list unsubscribed. He had spent all this time developing that relationship. You know, that's why you have to look at your list, not as names. Lists are people too. You have to look at them as an online family. And you wouldn't want to abuse your family. Maybe some people would, but that's not the rule of thumb. So, you know, why would you want to abuse your family And so that's the thing, you know, it's always the theory that says, I don't want to send out an email that I wouldn't send to my mother. Well, unfortunately, my mother's 95. She has no idea what I do. So that's irrelevant for me. But it's this concept. It's the concept. And you said it. It was relationship. And you don't know the damage you're doing. Now, he did know the damage because 30% of his list unsubscribed. So boo-boo, right? Big boo-boo. And he had spent so many years cultivating that list, being one with them, you know, being intentional with them, using, you know, the topic of this podcast. So you don't want to blow, you can blow that in a heartbeat. And so that is critical. So yes, you can have that discipline and not had my career. Serious, you know, clearly you don't have to have been in direct mail, but I think the direct mail has really helped me a lot. And I'm very, very, I'm like a teddy bear in email. I sell. I'm not a nonprofit, believe me. I sell mastermind groups. I sell books. I sell swipe files. I sell all sorts of stuff. But I do it in a way that is indicative of somebody who had to make every sale count in direct mail. I don't have to make every sale, every email. I don't make every piece of direct mail count. I don't have to make every email count in terms of dollars. And that's like, I'm a kid in a candy store. I can just deliver value and deliver content, and it's a joy. And then when I sell, I don't even have to put out a hook and a worm in the water. Sometimes the fish just jump in the boat, and that is so satisfying.
Now, Brian, I'm on your email list, and I noticed that your every email is not selling. It's just providing information, providing perspective. With email, we have that option to mix in valuable content with the occasional sales message. How does one figure out what's the right formula? What's the right mix?
That's a great question, George, because it's different, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. And some people would say, you know, I'm not going to send out an email without a sales message. That's fine. Some people say, I'm not going to send out an email without a signature, like my signature with, if you need me, go to this website, or if you want this or you want that. So that's a Dean Jackson thing. He talks about, he has a name for it, but it's the selling signature. Your signature always sells, but that's fine because the email itself is not all selling. My method, not that it's the best and not that it's the worst, it's what I do and it's congruent with who I am. I basically use the body of the email to tell a story, to teach a lesson, to adapt to certain things. I mean, a lot of times the stuff that I want to sell is stuff that I own the rights to of people that I'm telling a story about, like Gene Schwartz. I own the rights to Breakthrough Advertising, the best book ever written on copywriting and marketing. And I'm not objective, but I'm right. Let's put it that way. It's the best book. It's just the most amazing book. I talk about Gene Schwartz a lot in my blog. It's still a story with a lesson. I might put a hyperlink when I mention Breakthrough Advertising, and you can go to the sales page. I don't say go there, but you can go there. And then the way I separate it from myself is I use the PSs for the selling message. But I did one this last week. I had five PSs in my first time I ever did five PSs. I had a P, 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 S. And I had a PS, a PPS, a PPPS, a PPP. So I had five PSs. And the beauty of it was I took the second PS, which I mentioned in the blog, because the blog was about Gary Bensavenga, who is one of the greatest copywriters ever. And he still is. He's just not writing anymore, really. And it was about his event in 2005, the Bensavenga 100, which was an epic event. And Gary, and this is a good example of how I do it. So I said something like, you know, it was going to be Gary's farewell event. It's the last time he would speak in public, all of that. And then in parentheses, I say, see the PPS for when Gary, why Gary lied about this or something like that. And then in the PPS, I told another story about when he came out. I did an event in 2014, the Titans of Direct Response, which was a landmark event of, it was a tribute to Marty Edelstein, my mentor at Boardroom, but I got everybody to come out for it. I got Dan Kennedy, I got Jay Abraham, I got Joe Sugarman, I got Perry Marshall, Ken McCarthy, and Ben Savenga. But the story was about how Ben Savenga and I had an agreement that after the Ben Savenga 100, when I asked him a few times to speak for me, and he said, no, I'm done, no speaking in public, I said, and then we had an agreement, I would never ask him again. So in the PPS of this blog, and I'm just giving you an idea of how I do it and how you do a mix, I basically said, and believe me, when I mentioned the Titans of Direct Response in this PPS, I actually hyperlinked Titans of Direct Response to a page where if they wanted to buy the video of the event, they could. So I all have passive sales, but it's not a sales message. So then, when Gary and I had agreement, so when Gary then, so the story in the PPS is Gary approached me when he realized I was doing this event. And he said, Brian, you're doing an event with all these people. And I want to violate what I said that I would never come out and speak again. I want to speak at it. So then in my blog, I said, and of course, what I said to Gary was, you know, Gary, I didn't invite you. So no, I have no room for you. And then I wrote, joking, and I broke down in tears, basically, is how I reacted. So Gary then came. So it was a story about how Gary came out to the Titans event and spoke. And that was his last speech. Now, I took it even further. This was like a 3,500 word email. So there was a lot of shit here. But then I went to the PPPS, which was basically saying that Gary, the PPPS was something about this copywriter, Kevin Rogers. So the four PPS was about the speech that he gave at the Titans of Direct Response and another product that was a Ben Savenga interviews that are both bonuses to my launch, which I'm going through right now for my mastermind. So in the PPPPS, it was like, go here for some training videos and an offer to get both of those things for free as well. So now I'm selling all out in a way, but it was connected all to the story, to everything else. That not only makes me feel better, but it gives me a connectedness to the audience. You know, now I do run emails during a launch and those are all selling, but I also try to get something in there about, like I did a training video on how to hire a copywriter, but I did talk about in the email to get to that video, some stuff that, you know, was valuable. So I always try to create value wherever I write. But again, answering your question in a very long-winded way, as I usually do, it's for me, it's the newsletter, it's the blog, which is not sales, and the PS, which is sales. And there's subtle selling in the blog with links. And in the PS, there's actually additional content that's not selling sometimes as well. So it's a mix, which is different than a lot of marketers. I mean, I'm on a lot of marketers' lists and I don't know, and they do content. So they're doing content and selling. I don't know which is which when they sell it. So I want my audience, when they open my email on Sunday morning, to know that it's basically content all the time. And that keeps my open rates up too. I mean, my open rates, not that open rates is not the key metric for email, but you can't do anything if it doesn't get open. So, you know, I'm opening at total open some weeks because I mail it twice. I mail my email on Sunday morning and then I mail the same email on Friday morning to the people who didn't open on Sunday with a different subject line. So all of that in a week. And those two emails combined with multiple clicks and multiple people opening more than once, I sometimes get as high as 50%. Total open rate. Unique opens, I always get close to 40. And that's pretty good. And because they know what they're expecting if they open it, that it's not going to be a blaring sales message every week. It's going to be, I'll be selling stuff, but also it's consistent. Going back to the guy who wasn't congruent with his audience selling the real estate investing. The stuff I'm selling is all congruent. It's my training. It's my mastermind, which is all training and coaching. It's the books, the direct marketing classic books. It's direct marketing classic swipe files. So it's all congruent to what I do. And if I ever do someone else's offer, everybody knows on my list, I don't take an affiliate commission. I either donate the affiliate commissions to charity, or I give it back to them. So that, for instance, I have a Titans Accelerator mastermind, which is a virtual mastermind. There'll be over 300 people in it after the end of the year. And so I had an offer for somebody's copywriting program, which I believed in. I said, if you buy this program from him, I'm not going to take a commission, but I'll take that, what you spent, and put it against your renewal of the mastermind. So like the mastermind at that time was $1,500 a year. They paid $500 for this, because I believed in it. The guy is a good friend of mine. He's in my high-end mastermind, and I wanted to sell his product, but I didn't want to collect a commission. So I had like 15 or 19 people buy it at $500, and all those people are renewing now, and they're all renewing at $1,000 a year instead of $1,500. That's ways that you can incorporate, and incorporating charity is a great way to do it. I have a charity of choice, which is Charity Water, which is an amazing charity. They have an offer called the Spring, where you sign up for a $40 a month subscription charity. And basically Charity Water is all about providing clean water for everyone on the planet. That's their mission. And so, you know, you can't do anything without water. It's sort of like without water, you will not be a good marketer, among other things, right? So it ties in very much to my mission. And so I did a mailing that was, you could say it's a selling email, but in the PS, I talked all about Charity Water. I talked all about how I'm committed to it, that I donate $120 a month, which is takes care of gives three people water for a year. For in 1 month, you give three people water for a year. $40 a month gives one person water for a year. And so I basically said, you know, you donate to the Spring, $40 a month, come back to me, and I will, again, work a discount on your renewal of this, or you can take a discount of whatever, of a few hundred dollars, because $40 a month is $480 a year. So I think I gave them like a $200 discount on anything that I sell for donating that. I'm not getting the donation, but I'm using the donation to give them a discount. So I'm doubling up on the discount. And that, it's not only hasn't it worked, I mean, it's worked. So that's a good reason to do it, but it feels so good. And that's my intention, you know?
Now that's interesting. Your intention is that it feels good. So that raises the question, how much of your marketing, again, here's another mixed question. What's the mix between logic and emotion?
You know, I'm not bad at tying into people. I'm not a copywriter again, but I've seen every copywriter do it. I'm pretty good at getting into people's emotion. You know, I had a guy recently who wasn't going to renew his membership in Titans Accelerator, and I wasn't going to push him. I was going to, you know, respect that. But I basically went to him and we got into a little email, and he said, yeah, you know, this guy who's another member of Titans Accelerator has changed my business. I've hired him as a consultant. So then I just went back. It was logical and emotional. I just sent him an email back, and I said, I have a curious question for you. The guy that he's working with, did you meet him in Titans Accelerator? And he said, yeah. I said, because he was saying that he wasn't getting a lot out of the group. He wasn't getting, you know, he didn't feel like he was participating enough, or he wasn't getting value from it or a return on investment. And now, you know, I've got a logical and an emotional argument for him, because I said, you know what? You have to think about the domino, the first domino. You might not think you're getting a return on investment, but if you met this guy in the group, you never would have met him had you not been in the group. Then you take that domino, and you've got a line of dominoes of things, and you just push him down. Now you've got, he redid your website. He redid your email campaign. He redid your marketing. Wait, are you originating that to being a member in Titans Accelerator? or are you just saying it happened by magic because you're a magician? And so, I mean, he that one worked. I mean, he did come back and say, yeah, I'm stupid. I wasn't trying to make him stupid, but clearly he's stupid in a way, because he got value that was far beyond a typical measurement that said, I spent $1,500 on this virtual mastermind. I didn't get $1,500 worth of, value. Well, no, you probably got like $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 worth of value. But that's the emotion and the logic coming in. And I don't do it all the time, but I feel like it's my job to do it, because there are so many young entrepreneurs who just, I'm not going to say they don't get it, because that sounds like I get it, and I don't get it all the time either, but they don't get what it is to be like a human in the B2B marketplace, basically. To be a human in the B2B marketplace requires so much more than just figuring out, you know, how much did I spend? How much money did I make? Does it work? Doesn't work? Those are all direct marketing things, and that's all logical. But you've got to get down deep with your audience. You've got to know your audience. You've got to really be one with them. That's why I call my list my online family. You know, I don't just ignore them with automated funnels and autoresponder emails. I go out of my way to engage with them. Imagine that. I mean, and it costs me, believe me. It costs me in having 100 emails in my inbox. But again, what are we in this for? If you're in it just to make money, then you wouldn't do that. And in fact, I know a lot of gurus, and I'm not a guru, I'm an OG, but I know a lot of gurus who tell me if they saw what I do every day with my email, they would say I'm a moron, basically. They would say, why are you spending so much time on email engaging with your list? And I say, I'm just hanging out with my online family, but different perspective. I don't get to the emails immediately, but I respond to every email eventually, because I really want to have that additional connection, whether they buy from me or not. Can be frustrating. It can, because then people will start taking, you know, then they send me a long email asking me all their marketing questions. I said, well, I think you've taken this relationship a bit too far. And, you know, I basically say to them, this is the logical piece. I say, look, my time is valuable. I already gave you a lot. You got to pay to play. So,
and on that note, Brian, let's talk briefly about your latest book, Over Deliver. I love the word, fabulous title. My mentor would constantly stress to me the importance of over delivering.
Who was that? Who was your mentor?
Peter Erstbender. Very big influence on my life, that's for sure. The subtitle being Build a Business for a Lifetime, Playing the Long Game in Direct Response Marketing. Fabulous insights in here. And the interesting thing is that you, in providing this book, you lived more than lived up to the title, because not only is the book valuable, but when one buys the book, one also gets access to an online library of PDF files, of videos, of insights from other powerful classic marketers and copywriters.
Right. I would say that, you know, if you want to buy the book, don't go directly to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Go to the site that you're talking about. It's overdeliverbook.com. And you go to that site and you'll see, besides testimonials about the book and people endorsing it, mostly, you know, I'm very proud of that page, which I'll tell you about in a second. But the point is that you go to that page and you'll see there are 11 bonuses. Like one bonus is 19 keynote speeches that Jay Abraham has given in his career. That's one bonus. One bonus is a course that Jay developed that he spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop, and it's free on that site. there's a swipe file going back to 1900 of the best promotions ever. And why would you say, I want a promotion from 1900? Well, you'll never be lost for a new subject line again. I'll tell you that. That's the hint. There's a swipe file from Dan Kennedy. There's the Bensavenga bullets, all of Gary Bensavenga's newsletters in one PDF. So it's like priceless information. And so you go there, then you push a button to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, you buy the book, you come back, you put your order number in, and you access all of this stuff basically for a $17 book. And you get on my list, you become part of my online family. And so you get my blog every Sunday, and I won't spam you, and I'll do good things for you. But the interesting thing about that site, which was very interesting, so I had in the three things that you opened with, I said I've had two near-death experiences. The first was I had a prostate cancer in 2008. It was stage two. I caught it in time. And so I'm pretty sure I'm not going to die of prostate cancer. So that episode ended. 2019, literally the day after my book came out. My book came out, Overdelivered came out on April 9th, 2019. On April 10th, I had a near-fatal stroke on the floor of my bedroom. And I was rushed to the hospital. It was touch and go, but I didn't know because I was unconscious. And when I got up in the hospital with mostly everything intact, I mean, I was paralyzed on my right side when I went down on the stroke. But as you can see, no physical therapy, no speech therapy, anything like that. So I was blessed to come through it like that. I spent some time in the hospital thinking about, you know, if I had died, what footprint would I have left? I hate the word legacy, because legacy sounds like you're dead already. So what would be the footprint that I would have left? So I thought about the book, Overdeliver, because I got it on paper, which was good, but didn't satisfy me. And then I went a step further and I thought about the site, overdeliverbook.com. And that was a much more important footprint for me. Why? Because all of my mentors, all of the people that shaped my career are either on that site giving an endorsement or a testimonial, or the material that I'm giving away is by them. It's their stuff. And so I realized, and then I thought about, you know, I went back to something that had been in my mind since my stroke, which was the movie Coco, which is a Pixar film. And it's a fantastic film. It's a children's film, but it's not a children's film. And it's all about Dia de Muertos in Mexico, where, you know, it's the Day of the Dead, where Mexicans honor, not mourn, they honor the dead in their families and friends. And so, and the premise of the film, well, one of the premises of the film, which without giving it away, if you want to watch it, is that there's death and there's final death. Death is just when you die. Final death is when you die and you're no longer remembered. Big difference. So and there's a lot in the movie that is subtle. There's a lot in the movie that's for adults on this issue, which really it was meaningful. And that was, you know, when I thought about the Overdeliver book site, that I had almost died, that, you know, and so whether I'll be remembered or not, I hope so. But what I did with that site is that I was remembering Gordon Grossman. Do you ever hear of Gordon Grossman? No, Gordon Grossman was like the guy who basically invented sweepstakes and developed the Reader's Digest in the 1960s. He was a consultant of mine, and there's a PDF of his book on that site, a full PDF of his entire book, which is not in print. Talk about a priceless bonus. But Gordon Grossman, by just having that site up, as long as nobody takes it down and the internet doesn't go away, he'll be remembered forever at some point, right? And so and it goes through with everybody there. And they weren't all dead. I mean, Dan Kennedy is thankfully alive. He had a near-death experience, but he's alive. But I'm remembering him. And because I spend a lot of time on, you know, the idea of too many of my mentors are dead, because I have so many mentors from early in my career who are a lot older than me, I've outlived them just because they were so much older. You know, I stand on the shoulders of so many giants, and that I developed that site to honor all of them, that's going to stand the test of time more than the book, in my opinion. So that's, you know, but overdeliverbook.com is the, and then the other side of that, if you're too cheap to spend $17 to to get a priceless bonuses, what you could do is just go to briankurtz.net. You can opt into my list, become part of my online family. Nothing to buy, nothing to buy ever, actually. There's a lot of free content on the site. Every one of my blogs going back 6 years is on that site. It's a lot of rich material in there. And you could do that and be a bystander in my world, but you're not. Because if you're in my family, you're not a bystander. So I would say opt in at briankurtz.net if you don't want to buy overdeliverbook.com. But I suggest you buy the book just for the bonuses. In fact, buy the book, access all the bonuses, and when the book comes, throw it out.
That's funny.
But, you know, it's funny, but I only say that because, I mean, the book's valuable, I think, but it's, you know, it doesn't even begin to, but I do think that I'll go one better. Here's the best way to do it. Buy the book, go to overdeliverbook.com, buy the book, come back to the site, access all the stuff. When the book comes, you don't have to read it, but give it to somebody who calls you a mentor. That would be the spirit of the page and everything I talked about with Coco and all of that. So that would be the alternative to actually buying and reading my book. You have to buy it to get the bonuses, but if you don't want to read it, I won't be insulted, but give it to somebody who calls you a mentor. That would be even more meaningful, actually.
Positive spirit to wrap up on, Brian. My guest today is Brian Kurtz. P.S. You have to believe the numbers. Oh, PPS, be a human in the business-to-business marketplace. And I can't think of a PPPS just right now.
I'll give you the PPPS. Be a human in the direct marketing B2B marketplace. And then the next one would be not everything has to be automated email or autoresponder email or a funnel.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.